Welcome back to Kitchen Curiosity, the podcast that delves into hospitality and food service equipment, one conversation at a time. I'm your host, Radford Chancellor, and today we're at an iconic venue in Carpegiani. In this episode, we're going to be melting together two worlds of coffee and gelato, with both global passions born and perfected here in Italy. We're going to be speaking to experts from Ancelio and also from Carpegiani. And also I'm joined by Professor Jonathan Moss, who's a historian in coffee culture. So without further ado, let's get started. We are at the Carpegiani factory, so if you do hear any background noise or whatever, maybe they're making ice cream, who knows, just bear with us. So first off, I've got Carlos Gonzalez. He's the coffee competence and product manager at Ancelio Group, which is a brand that manufactures and makes coffee machines, part of the Ali Group. Carlos, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Good to see you.
Well, thank you for joining us. I think you've come yesterday.
Yes, I arrived yesterday from Milan just to stay here and ready.
Ready to go. Obviously, your company, I think you've been there 22 years.
Yes.
Is that right? Yes. Yeah. You kind of live and breathe coffee, I guess. Yes. Can you tell us a bit about your role and the company?
Yes. All my career is focused in the coffee industry.
Okay.
First in a roastery for a long time. And based in that experience, when I joined Ancelio, I tried to use all the knowledge to present and to make the demo demonstrations of the machines based on how the machine extract the coffee.
Okay.
For me, in my opinion, this is the focus. The important question is the cup of coffee, that this is the point for the consumer. This is the best interesting question. Then all of the other topics are important, for sure. The design or but the important question at the end is how the technology of the machine helps us to extract as better as possible the taste and the experience for the consumer when the consumer order a cup of coffee. Okay. Or a cappuccino. We are in Italy.
of course. And I mean, that can be different depending on where we are in the world, I guess, as well.
Yes.
Because, sure. As I've learned, a coffee or an espresso can have different connotations, I think.
Yes, for example, I like to talk about the traditional espresso, and that's the Italian traditional espresso. This is an excellence of the from Italy. And in Italy was invented the espresso machine and also that beverage.
Okay.
Yes, was... We could say that Angelo Moriondo, in the last century, was the inventor of that kind of machine. Then with a system without pressure, that's arrived in 1930, more or less. Mm-hmm. But in that moment, we have the first unit capable to extract a single cup of coffee.
Nice.
Before that, all the extractions were... with some devices very similar to the filter.
Similar coffee. To sort of what we see, the traditional sort of filter coffee system.
And and that's why the espresso grows in Italy, because it's, I will transmit my concept, because this is the worst system to extract coffee, but is the best system to remember the cup of coffee.
Okay.
Is the worst because it's so aggressive in pressure and in temperature of the water, and it's a very faster. In 30 seconds we extract the cup, but this cup is so concentrated that we slope in a moment in three sips we finish the cup, but then for a long time we are remembering that mouth feel and the flavors in our mouth.
Yeah.
The rest of the systems to extract coffee, for example, the filter, we need more time, and we enjoy a large volume of coffee, but the concentration is lower. And when we finish to enjoy that cup, because we finish the cup, we don't have remembering about that.
We
finish. And this is the reason, because I said, well, the espresso system is so aggressive, but it's so interesting, and it's a unique and particular way to enjoy coffee. For sure, it's my favorite.
Okay. And Rangelio, you make both sorts of machines, be it traditional...
Yes.
Automatic or
bean to cup. In Rangelio, we make agro coffee machines. This is fully automatics.
Okay.
And Rangelio, that this is the traditional and a segment that it's a Rangelio specialty, that it's for the specialty market with some features that the barista or the people who works in specialty coffee shops will have. But for sure, the principles of the extractions are more or less the same.
Okay.
Some machines have some improvements, like, for example, the temperature profiling, that we could set profiling temperatures during the extraction of the coffee.
Okay.
Going down or going up. Mm-hmm. It depends of the kind of the coffee that we are using and the sensorial profile that we will find in the cup.
Okay.
Then it's a matter to analyze and to set, and then the barista, skilled barista, could play with that, and it's something that I think is a never-ending research story. Then we, like a group, in Ali Group, we have another company that are our... Sorry, maybe the name is our cousins.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's not the same company, but we are under the same group. And in that we have the Coffee Queen, is under the brand Creme.
Okay.
But it's a company from the Nordics that they are specialized in filter coffees.
Ah, okay. It's more traditional sort of.
Yes.
Yeah, more traditional. So, Rangelio, what countries do you operate in the world?
Well, I think let me explain in a reverse way. Our incomes are the 6% of our incomes came from Italy.
Yeah.
The rest is over from the export for the rest of the world. In that way, the company has a solid volunteer to export and to be in all the different countries. Rangelio started to export in 1950s, at early 1950s. Just the company has 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
And from that moment, with some distributors, with then starts in the 90s with the US and Canada branch.
Okay.
Then arrives Spain, mm-hmm. that I take part on that. Portugal, Switzerland, Germany, and Austria. Mm-hmm. And, the last one, some offices that in Asia Pacific, Australia, China.
Okay.
And in China now is it's not branch, but it's a relationship with another company of the group. Now with this large family that take part in Ali, it's so interesting how the synergies could help to create some relationships.
So really a worldwide brand.
And the last one is the UK branch that has just born last year, just the first year. And I'm very proud because our colleagues are doing a very good job.
Yeah, yeah. And you've opened a new office there as well.
Yes, it's a commercial office with space for demos, trainings, and all the logistics, and for sure all the after sales services.
Fantastic. Well, hope that's positive for you as well. Just as we've come to the end of this section of the podcast, a couple of questions. What's your favorite coffee? You have to tell us.
What's my favorite coffee? It depends. It depends of the moment. It depends with who I share that coffee.
Okay.
And at the end, I like all the cups of coffee. I think there's a coffee for every moment.
Okay.
If you are expecting that I said, oh, my favorite coffee is from that country, that region, and that farm, it's not like that. Because coffee, well prepared, and a coffee without defects, and roasting in a good way, is fantastic. And then if you enjoy with someone because you are working and it's that the moment of make a break for comment or for with a cup of coffee, this is fantastic. It's a very good coffee. And I would also answer that my favorite coffee is the first in the morning when I am at home because I'm not preparing my cup of coffee. It's prepared for my wife. And that's perfect. When someone prepares me a cup of coffee, this is the best coffee.
I'm sure she'll be happy to hear that. Who's more fussier then, the barista or the customer, do you think?
Well, for us, the barista is a customer, but it's not the final customer. And in my point of view, the important question is to add value.
True.
And we are partners. Then the final customer is the consumer. And this is, for me, who deserves all our efforts. Because a consumer that enjoy the cup of coffee, a consumer that enjoy one gelato, is someone who said, I will repeat that. And when that is an habit of your lifestyle, then becomes not a necessity, because if one day you say, today I don't drink coffee, okay.
A routine.
It's not. But if that coffee is not a cup to activate, to make you more concentrate, it's only a moment to enjoy and a moment of relax. I'm sure that coffee, caffeine, and relax is not, but trust me, thanks to a cup of coffee, you could be more relaxed. And that's fantastic, because then this consumer said, oh, this is my cup of coffee. I like it. I enjoy it. And I repeat. And when people repeat cup of coffees, barista is happy because earn more money. The machines are changed more often, and I'm happy because we renew the machine or sell another machine.
Cool. Okay. Well, Carlos, lovely to talk to you. Thank you for your time and obviously traveling down here. We're going to go on now to talk to a professor of coffee history and culture, and then also your colleagues in the Ali Group from Carpegiani, and then you're going to come back and join us for a round table, if you like. So if you bear with us, we'll come back to you in a little bit.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks. So now I'm joined by Jonathan Morris, who's one of the leading coffee historians and author of Coffee, A Global History. We're going to hear from him about things around coffee beans, machines, culture, and some of the history behind it. Jonathan, welcome to the show.
Thanks very much.
Jonathan, just for the listeners, can you give a little bit of introduction to yourself as a professor and your work?
Yeah, so I'm a historian, and I started out as a historian of Italy. I drank rather a lot of coffee in Italy, as you can imagine, and when I saw Italian coffee beginning to spread over into the UK, the kind of Italian coffee drinks, I started thinking about the history of Italian coffee.
Right.
That moved me into a project called Cappuccino Conquests, which kind of traced, if you like, kind of the global biography of espresso as it goes around the world. And since then, I've really worked more on the history of coffee in general, ending up writing that book, as you referred to, Coffee, A Global History, and also making a podcast series, which is called A History of Coffee.
Perfect. Okay. And then you're also a professor at a university as well.
I'm a professor at the University of Hertfordshire, where I'm also director of research, culture and environment for the university. So my main base is there, obviously.
Okay. So maybe just sort of take us back to the beginning. Can you for the listeners, give a, you know, say a history about coffee. Where has it originated? How it came into our culture, European, British, etc., sure. Even worldwide.
Okay. Well, very briefly, I tend to say that there are five phases to the history of coffee. I'll only give you one sentence on each, otherwise we'll be here all day. Okay, but I mean, so coffee, we know coffee originates in Africa, in probably in southwest Ethiopia, that area of Africa.
Okay.
The first records that we definitively have of coffee, though, are when that coffee began being traded into Yemen. And that's around the sort of the 1450s, 1470s. So we know at that point that coffee was being brought from Ethiopia up across the Red Sea into Yemen, and it was being used by Sufis in their kind of religious services. Right. From there, it becomes a secular drink, because the great thing about coffee is it's not alcohol, so it's okay for devout Muslims to drink it.
Yeah.
And it spreads up the Arabian Peninsula. And of course, as the Ottomans, in the Turkish Ottomans Empire, spreads down into that peninsula, so it then gets moved into Turkey, the Ottoman Empire. Right. From there, in the sort of 16th century, into Europe, originally, in fact, via Venice.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, European companies, until this point, all the coffee had been shipped out of the port of Al-Makir in Yemen, which we begin to know as Mocha.
Okay.
And hence why we talk about Mocha a lot in the coffee trade.
Right.
And at that point, European powers acquire coffee seedlings and begin to plant them around the rest of the world. So the Dutch put them into Indonesia, modern-day Indonesia, Java, another reason why we call about Java in coffee, and then over to particularly the Caribbean and subsequently into Brazil and Central America.
Oh, okay, so it didn't originate from South America or anything?
No, it all goes back to Ethiopia, basically.
Wow. Okay. So, I mean, I thought it had come from those areas. So there we are. I've learned something.
Yeah, no, it's an interesting change when we see that it sort of moves across and moves around the world. And as you say, you know, today our two biggest coffee producers are Brazil and Vietnam.
Yeah.
And yet even 20, 30 years ago, that wasn't the case. You know, Vietnam is a very, very recent coffee growing industry of significant size.
Yeah, I guess one that everyone knows is Brazil, I think. And then,
exactly. Yeah. And Brazil really is the sort of, you know, Brazil makes it big from about the 1850s. From then on, it becomes the dominant coffee producer in the world.
Okay. So, I mean, obviously, we're the podcast today, we're talking about Rancilio, and you're also talking about Carpegiani. I think you've been to Rancilio factory.
Been there a couple of times. Rancilio kindly sponsored one of the, the second series of our podcast.
Of your podcast.
They did. Yeah.
So, I mean, how important is the machine? I know you're really a historian, but how important is the machine, I suppose, in the process we do today? And, what's your views on that kind of thing?
Well, if we were, we'd have to kind of walk it backwards. But I mean, today it's fundamental because espresso brewing, as it were, which is what Rancilio is creating, espresso machines.
Right.
That's the kind of brewing that you can really only do with a really powerful machine, because the essence of espresso is that you're using pressure to extract. And you use that pressure because it extracts through the coffee far quicker. So we can get a drink out quickly. So as as someone in the food service industry, you'll realize that, you know, being able to produce coffee quickly on demand, which is the essence of espresso, you know, that's critical to getting your customer the cup of coffee as quickly as you can.
Yeah.
Whereas obviously the more traditional methods, you'd be sitting around waiting for the coffee to brew. That's great if you've got time, but it's not at all what people are looking for.
Yeah.
So that machine is fundamental. And then all the variants that we can do with that machine, the variant in the pressure, the variant in the temperature, the variant of the amount that we dose in the brew, all of those things have dramatically different effects in the cup.
Okay.
So there's a real art to doing this.
To making it.
Yeah. And it is like, I think the best way of thinking about it is it's like driving a car, but it's like driving a really sophisticated car.
Yeah.
You know, you have to be a sophisticated driver to drive a sophisticated car.
And
that's the kind of machines that we're doing. So that's fundamental. But the thing is, of course, it's taken a long time to get there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So even over the history of Rancilio, which has been making machines now for about 100 years or so, those early machines would be nothing like obviously today's machines. They would be brewing with much lower pressure, generated usually by just using the force of steam. So, you know, two or three two bar, 1.5 bar, as opposed to today, we would normally standardize around 9 bar. Well, so, okay, you know, there's a lot of difference over the years. And of course, you actually see that in the drink itself. So espresso today, we would look at espresso and we think probably the key feature of the espresso is that it has a crema on top, that little sort of mousse of essential oils are extracted. But that doesn't happen until we reach about 9 bars. So it's only in the 50s, actually, that espresso, as we begin to think about it, even becomes to be seen as a drink with crema on. And that, the first machines to do that were called something new, called Crema Cafe. Right, you'll see ads of the time will always refer to Crema Cafe, cream coffee, because it has that cream on top of it, the crema.
Yeah, yeah. And I learned something as well a few weeks ago that, you know, espresso or coffee has different connotations depending on where it is. You could ask for a coffee or an espresso and get a different drink where you are.
Yeah, so in Italy, you don't ask for an espresso. You ask for a coffee.
And you get an espresso.
And you're going to get an espresso. Yeah. I mean, there's no argument about that. You know, it is extremely rare to get any other kind of coffee being offered in Italy. We're beginning to see a tiny, tiny, tiny specialty industry in Italy where there are a few places that might offer to make you a V60 or whatever.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you walk in and say, I want a coffee, you're getting an espresso.
Okay.
Of course, if you walked into a cafe in London and said you wanted a coffee, up until recently, you would have been getting probably something made with instant coffee. Yeah. And if you go there now, you're going to get probably an Americano.
Yes.
As the sort of the best way that we can produce a quick-looking version of a coffee.
Yeah, yeah. Of course. And you know, obviously in the UK, tea is always historically been huge. Yeah. Do you have the numbers to how that relates across the world against tea and coffee? Coffee is obviously rising dramatically here and Europe.
Yeah. So, I mean, we're a bit unsure, I would say. Some people still think tea is more drunk overall than coffee, but that is mostly in places where we're talking about what a traditional drink is.
Yes.
In the UK, tea was absolutely the dominant drink, became the dominant drink in about the sort of the 1750s. So, strangely enough, I think one thing that we always forget is Britain was an absolutely leading light in the coffee movement in Europe. The first coffee houses in Europe were actually opened in London. There are very specific reasons for that, to do with the kind of control over the trades and so forth. But that's where the first coffee houses are, so we're not that far away from there today.
Okay.
But by the 1750s, we're moving into tea. A lot of that has to do with the trade structures and the tax structures of the UK at the time, which obviously was had that big empire, particularly with India. Mm-hmm. But we're unusual in Europe in that respect. What changed is a relatively recent thing. So coffee really only began reappearing in the UK in the 50s.
Right.
But it's only the 90s that we see this kind of takeoff.
Yeah.
And that is really bringing in that sort of amalgam of the format that becomes really popular in the US, the new kind of the coffee shop format, let's call it the Starbucks format, because that is in effect as we know it. A lot of people start bringing that over. The first coffee company that does that over here is called Seattle Coffee Company, which is unsurprisingly comes from Seattle, two people who are in Seattle. Which eventually they sold to Starbucks a few years later when Starbucks came into the UK. But a lot of our brands in the UK, and if you think about them, are actually Italian brands or branded Italian. So Costa, which again had founded by two Anglo-Italian brothers, who had been active in kind of supplying the Italian catering industry here for some time.
Right, okay.
And then blew that up that was bought by Whitbread to create a kind of a vehicle for introducing this new coffee shop format, but very much kept on an Italian theme.
Costa was actually started by two British Italians.
Yes.
That's where it originated, before it was bought by the Whitbread brand.
Before it's bought by Whitbread before it then became part of Coca-Cola as it now is.
Yeah.
Similarly, in a slightly different way, Caffè Nero is a brand that's sort of created by again, an American guy, Jerry Ford, in the UK, but whose coffee was very much based on the kind of coffee that was going around Soho in the time. They kind of got their original coffee from the same Soho roaster who was supplying Bar Italia.
Yeah.
So it's you know, we have a much more of a sense of a kind of a blended thing here, where we kind of position ourselves more as understanding that coffee is coming from Italy.
Yes. Okay.
But do things with it.
It's a slightly different, yeah.
Slightly different way, slightly different sizes.
Slant to it as well.
Exactly.
I guess,
in our approach. Yeah.
And it's quite and it's quite an impulse purchase here, I think. I mean, for me anyway, you know, you walk past a Costa, Starbucks or whatever, and you just might go and buy one.
Yeah.
Be it chilled, be it hot, you know.
Yeah. So I think what it's become for the UK particularly was, well, that's something that you could see value in buying outside the house.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So you'll have the experience, you know, everybody in Britain knows how to make the best tea, the best tea for them. They know how to put water on a tea bag. Why would you pay somebody else to put water on your tea bag and not do it as well?
Mm-hmm.
So you don't tend to buy tea so readily out of home. Whereas coffee, particularly those Italian style coffees and those sort of, you know, the cappuccinos, the lattes, where you've got quite a lot going on with the milk, then that's something different. You can't do it at home, really, without a machine, and you've got to throw a lot of money at that machine. And then, you know, it's worth, as it were, in inverted commas, the money for that kind of specialty skill and that investment in the machine. You'll actually pay for the drink. And that's what makes the whole business work, because if you'll pay for that drink at quite a high price, then, of course, everything else that goes in there, the coffee shop, kind of comes for free. But actually, that coffee shop is somewhere where, particularly in the UK, we like to go and sit for about 20 minutes and have a chat. So it's not just that impulse purchase. It's that, rather than saying, you know, Radford, come over, we'll have a cup of tea together.
Mm.
I'll say, Radford, let's now, you know, just meet in the high street and have a chat over coffee.
Yeah.
And that's become our go-to, is much more, let's go to a coffee shop rather than let's have somebody over.
Yeah, that's a really good point, actually. It's true, isn't it? And it's evolved quite a lot. And must be a nightmare for you if you're a coffee connoisseur, historian in coffee. When we met, you had an espresso. Is that your go-to? Is that?
That's a very good way of judging whether or not you're going to get decent coffee in any other drink.
I won't say what your face was like when I put it down.
Yeah, it was, yes. Not the most impressive espresso I've ever seen, let's put it that way.
He was having problems with the machine, I saw.
I think so, yeah. No, and that's kind of part of the point, is you do need a good barista, and you need, like I said, it's a car, and you need somebody who knows how to drive a car in order to do it. You can't just be somebody who picks up the
wheel. I mean, really, I suppose, in this kind of setting, being this recording studios, being to cup might be better for them.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I would have said a bean to cup would be
because they're all
a better
kind of like more music people than.
Unless you're really going to invest in the barista skills, that's a sensible thing to do. So I would say yes. In anything that's not primarily coffee, where you're not going to be training your people, then a bean to cup is obviously an easier solution.
And what is your sort of go-to coffee order, is it?
So, depends what country I'm in, and depends what time of the day it is. In the UK, it will probably be a V60. If I'm going to a coffee shop, a specialist coffee shop, I'll probably go for some pour-over because I really want to taste the coffee.
Right.
If I'm in Italy, I'm going espresso, unless it's before 10 o'clock or 10:30 and it's time for breakfast, and then I'm going cappuccino.
Okay.
And I'll tell you why, because cappuccino in Italy is the only place they really do the right sizing for cappuccino.
Right.
As soon as we introduced cappuccino into the UK, we had all this, let's throw the chocolate on it, let's make it frothier and frothier, let's make it bigger and bigger.
Mm.
Cappuccino in Italy is a very balanced drink.
Yeah.
And that's what I like about it there.
Yeah, it's more... I think in Spain they have that thing called coffee con leche.
Coffee con leche.
Got that right? Yeah.
Yeah.
That's kind of also a bit more balanced, isn't it?
It is. Yeah. And similarly, a little bit with that cortado that we now see, it's more of a balance, though it's a smaller drink than a cappuccino.
Yeah.
So coffee con leche is the same sort of thing. Yeah.
And do you have a coffee machine at home, do I ask?
I have a number of coffee machines.
Oh, do
at
you?
Home,
oh,
as
serious?
My wife would be pleased to tell you and say. Getting to get rid of some. No, I have both an espresso machine and various other brewing machines at home. So I have a pour over machine at home, for example.
Yeah. I would hope so. Jonathan, it's obviously been great meeting you. I know it's a short interview, but it's been fascinating to hear your take on the kind of history of coffee and everything. So, yeah. And if people want to find more about your podcast, how do they search that? Where do they find that?
Well, it's called A History of Coffee. You'll find it on all good platforms, Spotify. The easiest way to find all of my stuff is to put Jonathan Morris Coffee in and you'll definitely find it.
Fantastic. Well, I think it's definitely worth a listen. So hopefully some people will pick that up. So thank you.
Thanks a lot.
Okay, thanks.
Welcome to the world of Ali, the largest and most diverse food service equipment company on the planet. With over 110 brands under the Ali Group umbrella, we serve more than 150 countries worldwide. Our brands are at the forefront of innovation, offering cutting-edge technology and ergonomic designs that keep pace with the ever-evolving market. But we're not just a global leader, we're a network of local companies working together to deliver excellence. Ali Group's unmatched expertise in food service makes us the proud exclusive sponsor of Kitchen Curiosity. To learn more, visit aligroup.com.
Okay, let's now talk gelato, and who better to do that with but the team at Carpegiani, a world leader in artisan frozen desserts and training excellence. Joining me here at the beautiful Carpegiani headquarters is Kari Ito, yeah, who's the Director of Education, Events and Communications at the Carpegiani Gelato University, and also Stefano Torquino, lead instructor and award-winning gelato maestro. So welcome both to the show.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for inviting us here to Carpegiani and see the factory. Would you mind just introducing each other, you know, introducing yourself, a bit about your role, what you do here?
Sure. Okay. So, well, as you can see from my name, I'm originally from Japan, but okay, I've been living here in Italy for the last 20 years. Started out in the fashion industry, and then I moved on to the automotive. Okay. And I've been with Carpegiani, covering the role of the director of Gelato University since the last 15 years.
Oh, wow.
And
okay.
4 years ago, I added on the responsibility of communication, and then since last year, also the events.
Right, okay. Yeah. Okay, so quite a big role, really.
Yeah, it's a lot to cover, but they're all coherent, you know?
Yeah. Okay, and Stefano?
So, well, I'm a food passionate, definitely. This is my first role, I would say, so since I was born. And I'm a gelato maker, and I've been in the gelato world since 2004. Where I made my very first gelato class actually here in Gelato University.
Oh, seriously?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Actually, my first mentor is downstairs, by the way.
Okay.
He's running a class right now. Yes. And I used to have two shops here in Bologna. And in 2011, actually, I joined Carpegiani Gelato University, and I became a Carpegiani's teacher, let's say, a gelato teachers, I would say, because actually what we're doing here, we're teaching gelato, how to make gelato.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Perfect. Thank you for that.
Thank you.
So Carpegiani is known globally and respected, not just for its equipment, but also the university here. Can you tell us a bit about the philosophy behind the university and what makes it impactful?
Sure. So Gelato University was founded in 2003. So, you know, relatively recent compared to the Carpegiani history, which was founded in 1946.
Okay. Yeah.
So it was founded with the mission to spread the culture of artisan gelato. Mm-hmm. And like, this is, you know, what we do. We stick to our mission. You know, when you come to Gelato University, you get, you know, pure independent knowledge of the science of gelato, how to make quality gelato, and everything behind creating a successful gelato business.
Okay.
So I think that's what makes people coming. And we provide now our education in over 30 countries around the world in 13 different teaching languages.
Oh, seriously?
And that's taught by expert of the local gelato business. You know, so I think that combined, you know, with the Carpegiani brand umbrella, which represents this artisan gelato sector is what makes it impactful. But there's a lot of like human elements to it too, you know, like there's people coming from all over the world with excited to learn about gelato because they want to, you know, open a new business and they also want to make a change in their lives, right? Mm-hmm. You know, like when people learn a new skill and they're, you know, changing their lives and they start to become radiant.
Yeah.
So that's what we see at Gelato University every day.
Right,
so
okay.
I think that's what makes it also is it impactful and
pretty
different.
Much going on all the time. It's pretty much open.
Yeah, yeah. We provide courses all year round and here in the headquarters in four different languages. We have two main classrooms and in parallel we run courses.
Okay.
Yep.
So quite busy. I mean, Carpegiani is world famous. You know, we know it everywhere. I mean, we in the UK probably we see a lot of the soft serve machines, I think. Maybe.
Right, yeah, yeah, yeah. London is full of soft serve machines. Yeah, I was recently there a couple of weeks ago.
Can you tell me a bit more about the brand and some of the products within it?
Sure. So here in Italy, you know, people often say, oh, I love Carpegiani gelato, you know, as if we make gelato ourselves. No, we're actually a technology company. So Carpegiani provides technology for frozen desserts.
Okay.
So the solution, the main solutions for the production of artisan gelato and artisan ice cream, which are two different categories of products in our opinion, are the pasteurizing machine and the batch freezers.
Yes.
And then, as you've mentioned, also the soft serve is another important part of our business, together with also shake machines. And what makes our industry quite complex is the fact that all these technological solutions are catered to professionals, like, you know, artisans and like, you know, family owned business, as well as global level key chains and international chains, and also to other industries like, you know, coffee, hotellery, restaurants, pastry. So yeah, the complexity of our business is that we have many different technological solutions to provide to different types of customers that have different, you know, needs and priorities.
Yeah, of course.
And this is the kind of competence we have here at Carpegiani.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't even think about shakes because I said that's quite a, is that a growing market? Has that always been there or?
No, it's growing quite recently. Yeah. Especially in the UK market, for example. Yeah.
Ice cream or gelato, you don't necessarily think about that. So, yeah, interesting.
Yeah, but that's also part of our business. Yeah.
And in the university, is there any sort of surprising flavors that come up? I mean, do they make ice cream here in a part of that course?
Oh, yeah, every single day. Yeah. The part of, you know, the learning is, you know, learning by doing. So
right,
that's
okay,
quite fundamental.
Okay, so real practical.
Yeah, and it's actually a good question because, like, any edible ingredient can be turned into gelato if you know the techniques of the recipe making,
right?
Yeah. So, yeah, you can turn almost anything into gelato. But I think one of the strangest flavors that I've seen recently, perhaps, is gelato made with snail slime, for example, you know, which is kind of like a superfood.
Snail slime.
Yeah.
That sounds quite disgusting.
Yeah, yeah, journalists went wild when they spread the news about this flavor.
What makes a good gelato and what makes like a great gelato, you think?
So I would say that it's a combination of definitely the ingredients. It sounds quite obvious if you want, but actually it's the truth. I mean, without a good ingredients, we can't make miracles. That's the point.
Okay,
so we have to start from very good ingredients, no? And if we can use fresh ingredients, that would be the best option. No? Fresh milk, fresh cream, fresh fruit, and so on. Then definitely we need knowledge. As you were saying before, and as Kari was saying before as well, you can't just chuck everything in, just mix it up, and that's it. No. Basically, you have to balance the recipe, you know? And to balance the recipe means that you have to you have to use the right amount of sugars together with the right amount of fat, together with the right amount of proteins in order to get the best structure, the best creaminess, and then the best taste, of course. No?
Okay.
And this is the second thing. And together with that, You need technology, of course.
Yeah.
So that's another very, very important point. And that is the first thing that we say, I would say, in the very first hour of our basic glass, you know.
Okay.
You can't make gelato without a good, without a proper technology, let's say. This is another thing.
Okay.
So we need, I think, especially to make gelato, we need to have a very good technology in order to get smaller ice crystal and then smoother texture, velvetier texture, warmer sensation in your palate, not something crazy cold, let's say, you know.
Yeah.
And that's why I think you need the combination of these three elements together.
Okay.
Good ingredients, knowledge, definitely, yes, and technology.
Okay. And obviously we're here at the Carpegiani headquarters, factory, university, yep, the whole thing. And you train people every day, different walks of life, different cultures, different, I guess, different languages and things. How do you approach that? And how do you, I don't know, get the right tempo, I suppose?
It's very cool, actually, honestly, because it's you got people from all over the world. So with different experiences, with different backgrounds, with different, you know, they make different jobs. You know, you can find a chef as well as a lawyer, as well as someone else who decided to change his life and all from a bank.
Oh, seriously?
Something like that. Yeah.
So like no experience at all?
At all, actually. At all. Zero, no?
Wow.
But they come actually super willing to learn and to change their life, basically, you know? And actually, we approach in the only way I think is the right way, so with passion.
Okay.
I mean, because as long as you're capable to transmit your passion,
mm-hmm,
then they're going to absorb the passion, basically, and they will understand much better what to do then.
Yeah.
So I think this is, I mean, no matter actually if you come from India, China, or South America, or Canada, anyway, passion is something international, I would say.
Yeah,
it's a common language. And in this way, as long as you are passionate and you're capable to transfer it, they're going to absorb it. And they're going to become super passionate as well.
Okay.
And this is the way to spread the good gelato culture all, mm-hmm, over the world.
So if people listening are interested in the university or coming here, what do they do? How do they get information?
Basically, we provide different levels.
Okay.
Because we got four different levels. We got the basic class.
Yes.
For pure beginners, let's, mm-hmm, say. Then we got the intermediate class, if you want to go one step beyond. The advanced class for professionals.
Who know what they're doing.
Exactly. And then a couple of years ago, I'm super proud of, actually, we launched also the latest class, which is the master.
Master class,
which is quite very scientific, I would say.
Right, okay.
Yes. And we are super happy, actually, of the success of this class, because it was a kind of a question mark, no? Because, mm-hmm, it's very detailed, very kind of sophisticated in a way.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't expect to have many people because we thought, oh, maybe it's just for gelato nerds or stuff like that.
Yeah,
you know? But actually, we are always full. I mean, the class is always packed all the time. And so we're super proud of it. And basically what we do in general for all the classes is the theoretical part during the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And we explain different topics, you know, depending on the level.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the afternoon, they put in practice what they've been learning during the morning part.
Yeah.
So you see them all also growing, let's say, because most of them, maybe they stay for a couple of weeks or 3 weeks, mm-hmm, or maybe for the full path.
Yeah.
And you see them that maybe the first day, they're not even capable to hold the spatula. And then you see the last day of the master, for example, that they make a super nice, well-presented and super good gelato pan. So yeah, that is great, actually. That is beautiful.
Yeah. I love it. That's quite impressive.
Yes.
And I mean, the masterclass, is it, I guess you get like Michelin star chefs and things interested in that and different levels and, yeah, I don't know, I feel that, yeah.
Let's say we think that the people are like, they're willing to learn more and more and more, actually. Mm-hmm. We've seen that in the last 10 years, probably, the level, actually, of the customers, the students coming here is higher than what it was. They arrived already prepared. They studied already. They learned. They already, they've been reading books as well. You know? And so, actually, in order to give them much more confidence, you know, and control of, mm-hmm, the product, in order to come up with their own style gelato, to use their own ingredients, you know, because, you know, if you go to Thailand or if you go to Argentina or if you go to, I don't know, UK, for example, you can get so very different ingredients.
Yeah.
And definitely. With this very important, let's say, very deep knowledge, you can do what you want pretty much.
Okay.
It's basically given the rules of a game so you can play the game in the way you like, with your style, with your personal impact in the way you prefer, and using whatever kind of ingredient, as Kaori said before.
Yeah.
So we were actually very surprised to use some kinds of ingredients, in the beginning, but now actually really whatever kind of edible ingredients, edible products, it could be turned into gelato.
Yeah. I mean, I've learned something there. Because in your mind, you know, you think cappuccino, you think manufacturing of machines.
Yep.
But really, it's also really about that deep educational Correct. Knowledge.
Correct.
And empowering yes. your customers, I suppose.
We definitely think that the combination of knowledge and technology, it's the perfect combination. Because if I give you a Ferrari...
Yeah.
But you don't know how to drive it, then it's going to be a problem.
True. That's a really good analogy. So you can give me a Ferrari if you want. Yeah. but just to wrap it up on this section of the podcast, if you could eat one flavour of gelato for the rest of your life, what would it be? There's a lot of pressure there.
it's quite a simple answer for me, because it's crema.
Okay.
It's custard, let's say, you know.
Yeah.
Because... it's the one, actually, I decided to come up with my career next. And I'm from Bologna, by the way.
Yeah.
And in Bologna, we love eggs in general. So that's why all the pasta is egg-made. Tortellini, tortelloni, tagliatelle, and so on. And also the desserts are, most of them, egg-based. And custard is very iconic to identify... a kind of very autochthonous dessert from Bologna, actually, and I'm quite proud of my origin, and I love it, and that's why I would say lemon custard, it would be my favorite one.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. Well, thank you both for the introduction
thank
to
you
Carl. We're going to take a short break, and then we're going to come back, and Carlos is going to join us, and we're going to just talk about gelato and coffee and the synergy.
Fantastic.
Sounds great.
Thank you. Okay, so we're going to bring everyone back together. We've heard from both sides of the spectrum, if you like, coffee and gelato, and kind of another. They do kind of go together as well, of course. So looking ahead to the next 5 years, what do you think is like the biggest opportunity for food service operators? You know, but be that in Italy or even, let's go wider, internationally.
I think it's focus on the basic concept, on the product.
Okay.
The product must be enhanced, and it's not a matter. It's not only a matter of ingredients. If you use the best coffee or the best basis for the best fresh products to prepare the gelato, is to be very honest. And there's also a question that it's the sustainability and the healthy of the product that some years ago, nobody thought that, maybe the gelato has sugar and in my coffee there's a concentration of caffeine or other alkaloids. The question is, where's the experience, where's the limit, how can I consume that product? And for sure, enjoy that, because maybe people prefer eat artisan gelato very good, very well prepared, mm-hmm. or as an espresso very well prepared from a coffee that I know the traceability and the origins, and not whatever kind of cup you could receive. That's the question. And I think also the consumer is prepared to pay something more to ensure that pleasure in the experience.
Okay.
Yeah, what we're seeing from, you know, gelato segment is that we see gelato not only as a freestanding gelateria, you know, as we know it here in Italy, but gelato is going into pastry shops, quality gelato is going more and more into coffee shops, it's going also into like hotellerie and everything. So we see like insertion of gelato, like quality artisan gelato and soft serve in many different like segments and contexts, and we see definitely that as an opportunity to grow, and I think it's a great way for, you know, businesses to have different like revenue stream during different times of the day, because one of the limits of gelato traditionally is the fact that it's very much related to the summer season, and now slowly people are starting to consume frozen dessert throughout the year in many different contexts and locations. And it's mainly consumed in the afternoon, lunch and on, or also in the evening. And I think it's quite complementary with coffee, you know. Coffee, we associate it pretty much with the morning time. And then maybe like, you know, at lunch and in the middle of the day, I guess. Yeah. And gelato can, you know, fill in the other moments. So, yeah, I think, it's a great opportunity for businesses.
Could be complementary, because when you finish to consume coffee, is the moment that you start to consume. During, for example, during the summer, midday to advance, it's the moment to... usually people don't consume gelato on the breakfast.
No,
it's not very common.
It's not, but it could be a good way to mix in coffee and gelato.
Yeah. Oh, my favorite dessert after lunch is affogato. Yeah, you know?
I think we are addicted here with affogato.
me too.
Stefano, do you see any big opportunities for operators? Obviously, we touched on origin and quality and that synergy, if you like.
Yeah, I think in general, what we are seeing in the market in general is sort of, let's put it in this way, contamination between different sectors, like, of course, synergetic sectors like pastry, gelato, restaurants, cafeteria, and so on. Yeah. And in general, we've seen that all of them, they can cooperate very well together, because coffee and gelato as well actually are very flexible.
Yes.
And so, and they are very versatile, no? And another thing we think it's very interesting is to create contrast. The people love contrast, you know? Imagine something soft with something crunchy, something hot with something cold, something acidic with something sweet, for example, no? Our palate in general love contrast. And so I think the combination of coffee and gelato is perfect also because it's a perfect example of contrast, basically.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, we live in a convenience world, social media world. Is convenience king, or is what Carlos saying, you know, origin and craftsmanship is still important? Do you have a view on that? Or?
Well, I still think that people are willing to recognize the value of the craftsmanship. If they know where things are coming from, what the value is, they're willing to like go out of their way. Like, you become a destination, you know, you're not just passing by. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah,
I totally agree with that. Yes, absolutely. I think this is the difference between artisan, let's say, in general, and industrial, if you want to put it in a way. And as we are artisans, by the way, I think we have to differentiate and we have to put this point as our turning point, let's say, from artisanal to industrial market, I would say. So definitely it's absolutely super important.
Yeah.
In my opinion, let me only complimentary that because in my opinion there's something interesting to using single origins coffee to prepare affogatos, to prepare mixing with the ice cream, because from a specific farm region we have maybe a unique flavor note, berry, floral, chocolate, citrus, and coffee, and it's so complementary with the gelato sensory profile. Also, it allows you to highlight the coffee terroir in the dessert context. And the customer can experience seasonal differences and origin profiles in a familiar, comforting format. Yeah. Then, for the affogato, it's so interesting how we can pair the both products. For example, a natural processed Ethiopian, it has blueberry, strawberry notes that is in particular an ingredient of the gelato. Mm-hmm. Washed Colombians is caramel citrus, pairs well with hazelnut or with fior di latte gelato. Guatemalan or Costa Rican, Central American coffees, have milk chocolate or subtle fruits. This is creates balance, comforting profile with the classic vanilla.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, well, we need to avoid coffees that are too light in body. And this is because, I said, for me, the best way to prepare the coffee for the affogato and to mix with gelato is espresso.
Yeah, that intense, the very, very intense
yes,
flavors.
And that's the question, because filtered coffee is so light in body. And then on the gelato disappears the flavors of the coffee.
Yeah. So just as we sort of coming to the end of this section of the podcast, we've got a couple more minutes, we'll come to an end. You know, maybe a couple of fun questions. If you're going to pair a particular coffee, we've already touched on it, but a particular coffee type with an ice cream or dessert with an ice cream, or can you give me some ideas, some different things? Just give people some extra info.
I love affogato.
Right, okay. So
and that's the way. But for example, I would say that for prepared coffee, it's so important the freshness.
Freshness.
And we need to prepare the coffee and just drink it or use to prepare the affogato.
Yeah.
Because this is the way that we could retain aromas. Because our beverage is so hot and the volatile compounds were spread on the ambience. This is different for example, for the gelato. The gelato is cold and retain all the flavors at the internal of the structure.
Okay. So.
Other questions that I think I would emphasize is it's the in coffee is the body or the structure of the beverage. But also in gelato, the texture, it's something that it's unforgettable. Mm. When you eat a very good gelato, this is something that smelt in your mouth and it's fantastic. It's the same with a good coffee. And I think it's we could design the parameters to make sensorial analysis. And I think we use the same topics. We are using the completely the same topics. Our two products that they are very, very, we could mix, but then they are different because one is hot, the other one is cold.
Opposites.
Well,
one is opposites attract.
Yes, exactly. But then it's the mixing is so fascinating. It's fantastic because I think, for example, I love affogato. It's one of my.
And you know what I think? I think coffee could be turned together with gelato. I mean, of course, also in something savory related. So, for example, I was thinking maybe in a restaurant. If you got something acidic, I would say, acidic, you know, like Ethiopian, you said, no? Maybe it can work together with something fruity, for example, like an apricot, you know, and maybe with a kind of spice like rosemary, something like that. Mm-hmm. And you can use it as like a pre-dessert sort of thing, for example, in order to clean up your palate with something refreshing and with body at the same time, you know, as you said, with structure anyway, you know? So this could be something probably different, I would say.
Yeah.
because I don't know if you ever tried. I've never tried actually apricot and coffee. I'm just thinking.
You just think that's very good.
So you know, Radford, we're going to have a Rancilio Machi in our area of Carpegiani during the whole show. So we're going to do demos of coffee and gelato combined together. Yes, at the whole show. Yeah. Exactly. So yeah, we're going to come up with these ultimate specialties that combines the both of our worlds.
Absolutely.
Definitely worth visiting host, where we're heading to next, actually. And visiting the stands and having a look. Just while we touch that quickly, you're exhibiting quite a lot of machines or at host? What have you got?
Yeah, we're going to have a pretty range.
What we do essentially, we've got machines there and we run demonstrations as well. Yeah. If the customer comes, then they want to have a look on how to use the machine or they need information in general related to the machines, related to gelato, of course.
Of course.
We are there, actually. We are totally at their disposal. Yeah.
Perfect. Okay, well, huge thank you to all three of you and also to Jonathan earlier on. I hope you've enjoyed the podcast.
That was fantastic.
Yeah. And I will see you shortly in Host Milan anyway, so that'll be quite good.
You're more than welcome.
Thank you. Okay. So as I said, next time we're heading over to Milan Host, one of the largest important food service equipment shows in the world. And I'll be on the Alley corporate stand Friday, Saturday and Sunday recording a live show in late afternoon. So do pop and say hello. And as we heard, Carpegiani and Rancilio are going to be there as well with ice cream and coffee. So visit them and I'm sure they'd be happy to see you. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. Please subscribe, leave a review. If you've got anything you'd like to ask next guests or comments for Host Milan, please email me at radford@kitchencuriosity.co.uk. Kitchen Curiosity is proudly brought to you by Alley Group. Until next time, thank you for listening. Keep it brewing and enjoy your gelato.
Absolutely.
Kitchen Curiosity is written and hosted by Radford Chancellor and is edited and produced by Tom Anderson. Kitchen Curiosity is exclusively sponsored by Alley Group and is a Sound Rebel production.